You're listening to the AHTB Cereals and Oilseeds podcast. Monthly highlights from your arable levy organisation.
Hello and welcome to the AHTB Cereals and Oilseeds podcast. I'm Ellen Holdsworth, and this episode, as the year marches on, we're looking at fungicides. First up, here's Jason Pohl and Paul Gosling from AHDB on fungicide resistance, varietal disease resistance, and the alternatives to chemical disease control.
I interviewed AHDB's Paul Gosling at the start of 2018 about ways to build resistance management into fungicide programs. 12 months on, Paul is back to update us on how fungicide efficacy has changed and to discuss some new publications that look to bring much needed structure to the complex world of resistance management. Paul, welcome back. Let's start with some basics then. What is fungicide resistance and what causes it?
Hi Jason. Well, it's simplest, it's a heritable trait in the fungus that reduces its sensitivity to fungicide. It arises due to natural variation, so it's a genetic mutation. But the important thing to remember is it doesn't necessarily mean a change in field performance. If the change is quite small or if it's only a small proportion of the population that's affected, it doesn't necessarily impact on field performance, and people need to remember that when they hear or read about changes in fungicide sensitivity.
So you mentioned fungicide sensitivity and fungicide performance. Well, that's something that takes centre stage every year at the Agronomist Conference in December. And this year we were joined by Stuart Knight, who provided us with that annual update of fungicide performance. So what's the latest picture then when it comes to these fungicide sensitivity shifts in the UK pathogen population?
Well, despite the fact that we had a low disease pressure year because of the hot, dry summer, we did see shifts in the sensitivity of susceptoria populations, particularly to STHIs. The shift wasn't dramatic, but it continues a trend that we've seen over the last few years. And we can now see quite clearly a shift in the performance of both the solo STHIs and the azole-STHI mixtures in our fungicide performance trials. Now, the performance of commercial programmes in 2018 was good again. For the other diseases with evolving resistance, such as net blotch, we don't do so much testing, but the field performance remained fairly stable in 2018, so we don't think there's been any dramatic shift there either.
Well, that's some good news there. So let's turn to those publications now. So I believe AHDB has issued two as part of its collaboration with the Fungicide Resistance Action Group UK. So why did you team up with them and what does the guidance look to do?
Well, the UK Fungicide Resistance Action Group does an excellent job of gathering the latest information on the resistance status of crop pathogens and formulating advice for growers and agronomists. But it's got very limited resources. We knew that there was evolving resistance issues in a number of cereal pathogens, plus potential loss of some quite important fungicides that could have an impact on disease management in cereals. So we decided we need to raise the profile of resistance management and provide some clear anti-resistance messages that the whole industry can agree on. This collaboration does that. It allows us to use AHDB's comms resources to bring those industry messages out to growers and agronomists.
Well, the topic of integrated pest management is creating somewhat of a buzz at the moment. And balancing the use of chemical and non-chemical control methods has always been a particular challenge. This new guidance puts varietal resistance as the foundation of any fungicide program. Although this sounds like a sensible plan, it's not always simple, is it? So what's the strength and what are the weaknesses of this approach?
Well, Jess, I wouldn't say that using varietal resistance is complicated, but historically the more resistant varieties had a significant yield penalty, but we've also seen some breakdown of varietal resistance to rust from time to time. And this tended to put growers off reducing fungicide use on these varieties. But the yield penalty is much less in wheat now. But the big question is still how far you can actually cut fungicide use on these more resistant varieties and still have good disease control. And we've got good evidence now from research over the last few years that an azole plus a multi-site is sufficient at T1 in these more resistant wheat varieties. But you probably still need an STHI at T2. But you might also be able to drop the T0s as well on these varieties, but so far we haven't got the research to show this. But the issue for some growers is still that relying on controlling diseases with fungicides has proven very effective and profitable over the years, and in many respects it still is. But I think with these new varieties coming off the recommended list, with 7s and even an 8 now for Septoria, it's time to look again at how we manage disease in wheat. In barley it's a bit different, the breeders are behind somewhat in developing the resistant varieties, and as we've seen with the withdrawal of the ranularia ratings on the recommended list, there is still some way to go. But there are some more and less susceptible varieties, so there are options there for managing disease.
So looking beyond variety resistance, there are of course other cultural controls you can deploy in the field. What would you say the main things are that people should be thinking about when it comes to cultural control this season?
Well, there are a wide range of things that people can do. There's the obvious things like removing the green bridge, incorporating trash and diversifying rotations. But for example, some growers may not realise that delaying wheat drilling to the middle of October makes a big difference to septoria pressure in the spring. And that of course fits well with blackgrass control and BYDV control. If people want to try something different, we know that variety mixtures can have a big impact on disease. And it's done a little bit in organic farming, but it's still a bit left field and there are obvious challenges with that sort of approach.
You mentioned organics there, but farming without chemistry is still a long way away for most of the industry as it looks to keep up with global demand for cereal products. So let's turn from those cultural options now to chemical. What's the latest guidance in terms of when and when not to treat?
I don't think anyone's going to question the need for the key T1 and T2 fungicide timings in winter wheat and barley. There's a strong yield response in all but the most extreme circumstances, but growers really need to start thinking about the T0 and the T3 timings and ask if the disease pressure they're seeing warrants treatment of these timings, especially in these new, more resistant varieties. As the yield response is small, even in high disease pressure years, but we still get selection for resistance. As for timings like T1.5s, T4s and T5s, there really shouldn't be a need for these extra spray timings. And if people are using these on a fairly regular basis, I think they need to ask the question, are they managing disease appropriately in those crops?
So, as you say there, you know, T1, T2, key treatment type timing. So the decision's been made to treat. Now, I guess the next thing is about dose and getting that right. So what are the rules? And do those rules hold true for both wheat and barley?
Pretty much so, yes. The research done over the last 5 years or so has shown that dose has a much smaller effect on selection for resistance in fungicides that are undergoing the slow shifting sort of selection that we see with azoles and septoria than it does on the single step or big step changes like we've had with strobilurins on septoria or we're seeing with STHIs on septoria. So what that means in practice is that it's safer from a resistance management point of view to increase the rate of the azole component of a septoria program than it is to increase the STHI component. But of course it's not always as straightforward as that, because until resistance appears and we can characterise it, we don't know whether it's going to be slow shifting or fast shifting. But as a rule of thumb, don't use any higher dose than you need to control disease, not just from a resistance point of view, but from an economic point of view, because the higher you push the dose, the less of a yield response you get.
Let's talk about mode of actions now. Although they're dwindling, there's still several modes of actions out there, and they all play a very useful role in protecting efficacy and providing good control. Fungicide Futures gives guidance that's useful and illustrates the pros and cons associated with mixing and alternating these modes. So what's the best way, would you say, to balance a fungicide program?
The latest research suggests that actually the difference in mixing and alternating is not quite as big as we thought. The balance is still slightly in favour of mixing. And with a single site acting fungicides like the azoles, the STHIs, strobilurins, morpholines, those sorts of things, it's about diversity. So for instance, in barley, the default can sometimes be just to go straight to prothioconazole and the STHIs. They're very effective, but other active groups like strobilurins, caprodinil, morpholines can also be effective against some barley diseases and contribute to control and ease the selection pressure on the STHIs and the azoles. In wheat, it's a bit more difficult because for septoria, there are very limited options now. But where rust is a target, strobilurins still have good control. They provide an alternative to the azoles. Because even if septoria isn't the target, if you're applying an azole to control a rust, you're still selecting for more resistance in septoria.
So last time we touched on the use of multi-site chemistry. Remind us, why is it so useful and how should multi-sites be best deployed across the spray programme?
Well, multi-sites can and should be deployed right across the programme. They can substitute for the single sites in some cases, and of course with ramularia and barley, chlorothalonil is now the only effective active we have left. And where they're used in mixture with single site actives, they reduce selection against the single sites and they also add useful efficacy, especially against septoria. So they really are a key component of the programme.
So when it comes to planning sprays this season, what do you see as the single most essential must-do for 2019?
In wheat, it's definitely the multi-sites. They'll help slow further selection for resistance to azoles and STHIs in septoria. And also they add really useful efficacy for septoria control. In barley, I'm going to cheat a bit. I think I'm going to have two. The first one is diversity of actives. We've got a wider range of actives that are effective on barley diseases. Use as many of them as you can in the program to keep the pathogens guessing. And the second is chlorothalonil at T2. We really need it there for ramularia control. We've got nothing else that will do that job. until good varietal resistance comes along, we're going to be reliant.
Thanks, Paul. That's some really sound advice. Thanks for joining us again. So the Fungicide Futures publications contains a very succinct but a comprehensive overview about how to build those robust, sustainable fungicide programs this season. These can be accessed via the HDB website.
And all the links are also in the episode notes below. Now, we're going to join AHDB's Emily Pope and Stowmarket farmer Brian Barker as they discuss some managed lower inputs tryouts at Brian's farm.
Hi, I'm Emily Pope. I am Knowledge Transfer Manager for the AHDB and I'm here today with Brian Barker.
Hi, I'm Brian. I am the Strategic Farmer for the East. I've been involved with the AHDB at the monitor farm level and now strategic farm level, trying to link research practically onto farm as a demonstration for other farmers who want to find out more.
So, as Brian said, one of the things that we are doing at the Strategic Farm East is to link research and practice. And one of the demonstrations that we've got in the ground for Harvest 2019 is on the topic of lower managed inputs. Brian, can you briefly describe what that trial is?
Yeah, so as farmers, we're getting asked to basically produce more by applying less, and so lowering inputs through the season is critical. And so to try and do this on a practical basis on farm to show other farm what can be done, disease levels if we do drop our rates and things like this. So it's really critical, but also doing it over a number of varieties is also what we're trying to aim with the demonstration we're doing this spring.
So you mentioned that we're looking at different varieties. Can you tell us a bit more about which varieties you've chosen and why you've chosen them?
So we've basically chosen a number of varieties, which are Silverstone, Graham, Siskin, Shabras and Santiago. These have all been chosen because on the RL, their yield score is within 2 points of each other. And they're all sort of very similar, but sort of output wise, but their disease package is slightly different. And so this will give us a range of growing traits in the field to look at when we're trying to apply the different levels of inputs throughout the season. So we've got the five varieties have been drilled 90 degrees to the tram lines. And so they're blocks of 50 metres by 60 metres, which will be then what we're looking at through the season. So it's on a big scale, so the whole trial covers 17 hectares. And so through the season, we'll then farm the tram lines traditionally across the varieties, and we'll be able to see how they change depending on what level of inputs that we have per tram line.
So you've mentioned that you are going to manage the different varieties using different levels of fungicide inputs. Can you just tell us a bit more about those?
So the idea for this trial is that we are trying to basically put our farming system to the test, where we say that we farm to potential, not the yield of hope. And so we sort of analyse our crops individually against what we feel is the theoretical yield that area is going to produce. But sometimes we could be said that we sometimes turn the tap of inputs off early. And so what we're trying to do here is basically give every variety the three options of the farm standard, which is the most cost-effective program that myself and my agronomist put together for the season and the conditions that we see in the field before that timing. But also we're very conscious that we can drop our rates and how low do we go, and that is something that we're then going to have two tram lines, which is basically the bare minimum that we think we can sort of apply to be cost effective. But then also we're then going to do the Rolls-Royce treatment, where we're going after and protecting to the nth degree and investing a little bit more into the crop. And so we'll have a matrix of the farm standard, the low input and the Rolls-Royce treatment to then give us a cost analysis across the whole area of the demonstration. So we can see that some varieties might actually have a better cost of production where we've actually reined back the inputs because the season was drier or there was less pressure. And so it may have done better as a cost of production by investing less into it. But then another variety may actually be doing much better if we're investing wholly and solely into it. So it's how can we learn to adjust our farming system to reduce rates, but not losing the vital importance of yield, but trying to find that happy balance.
So the Strategic Farm East Open Day will be held on Thursday, the 6th of June this year, where we'll be inviting people to come and visit the demonstrations that we've done this year. What do you think the benefit will be that other farmers can get from this work?
Well, hoping that there'll be a good turnout for the Open Day, and farmers will come and see how demonstrations can be simply applied to their own farm. So we want as the Strategic Farm Programme, to deliver a series of simple on-farm demonstrations or theories or methods that they can take back to their own farm and try different topics which they're interested in. So hopefully we might get a few people who go away from this trial and see all the varieties that I grow or have the potential to grow in one field and how they might be able to replicate this idea to then challenge their mindset on how they can actually lower the input and also getting their knowledge of their cost production much more into their mindset of when making the agronomical decisions that we do with the agronomists. It's really about challenging the mindset, but then also bringing the results which they see when they try this trial demonstration next year. We can then actually use the collaboration of farmers to say, well, actually, I saw the best cost production on X variety in the lower, but then I might find in a different situation that a different variety did better for the lower. So by getting a lot more farmers to talk about it and collaborate their results and sort of do this on farm sort of demonstration and trialing, we'll be able to sort of really speed up the knowledge exchange of how we can all lower our inputs and which varieties may actually work better than the others.
That's all for this month. This is going to be the last episode in this channel. As of March, we'll be joining forces with the rest of AHDB. There'll still be a cereals and oilseeds episode once every 4 weeks, but it'll be easier to listen to stories from all the other sectors too. There's more information in the show notes, or you can search for the AHDB podcast wherever you listen. So, thanks for listening, and join us in a month for the new, improved AHDB podcast.